Hi folks, Nathan Pierce here with Family Protection Ministries. Thanks for joining us today. I have a few things to talk about, and there are a number of things in the news that we could get into. I just want to mention a couple of them, but before we get into that, I'd like to start with our verse for today from Ecclesiastes chapter 12, verse 13. The end of the matter, all has been heard. Fear God and keep his commandments, for this is the whole duty of man. And we can appreciate Solomon's wide range of knowledge and understanding, being the wisest man that ever lived, and realizing that he encountered all kinds of questions in his life. But Ecclesiastes tells us about his perspective on the world and how you can delve into all kinds of different projects in life, but the only thing that really matters at the end of the day is that you fear the Lord. And I think that whether we're talking about any kind of government or policy or education, which we deal with around here a lot, the thing that's most important is to fear God. And that can be in contrast with a lot of different things, whether to not be afraid of certain things. Certainly we should fear God more than we should fear government. But I think that it can build the context for how we look at education as well, because if we look at our beginning of wisdom, as it says in Proverbs, and we look at the most important thing of fearing God and understanding his truth, recognizing that he commands us to fear him. This is the whole duty of man, it says, fear God and keep his commandments. If we start with that, and that's the foundation for our education, we'll have a very different drive for our education. We'll have a very different structure for our education. We'll have a very different content matter for our education, and we'll have a very different way in which we go about our education. So let's get into it now. Welcome to the Frontline with FPM, where we talk about California politics, homeschool freedom, parental rights, and the family. I'm your host, Nathan Pierce, and thanks for joining us today. Let's jump right in and see what's going on here on the Frontline. All right, so with that as the foundation, knowing that we need to fear God and keep his commandments, for this is the whole duty of man, Ecclesiastes 12:13. I want to get into a couple of news items, and then we'll talk a little bit again about mission, purpose, and the focus for education. Let's start with a recent Time Magazine article that talks about President Trump. Time Magazine, as you know, isn't particularly conservative, but they have an article that is written, it's from the editor of Time Magazine, and it's dated May 27th, 2024, and the issue at point here is sort of looking at Trump, his presidency in the past, and following his campaign in the present, and sort of pinpointing the specific policy issues, which kind of have been overshadowed by a lot of other things in the news about Trump over the last number of months. But they're looking at his policy issues, and there's been a lot reported about what Trump did while he was in office, things that people are upset about, things that perhaps conservatives are grateful for. But if you look at what Time Magazine is saying here in the context of looking at his policies, I think there's a really interesting phrase in here. The article is covering leaders, and it starts out with this sentence: interviewing political leaders has been a staple of Time's journalism for decades, as we report on the most influential people in the world and bring those insights to our readers. With 6 months to go until the U.S. presidential election, we want our coverage of this campaign to help the world and America voters understand what the candidates would do if elected. Today, Donald Trump is in a better position to win the White House than at any point in the previous two campaigns. Time's Eric Cortellesa, who covers the Trump campaign, interviewed the former president twice in April to hear from Trump himself what a second term would look like. So they're they're interviewing Trump with a focus on what he would implement in his policies once he's in office. Now, we know that the president doesn't write law or isn't supposed to under our U.S. Constitution, but however, we do know that whoever sits in that chair does have profound impact. And one of the points that they've made in this article, a little bit further down, has to do with judges. Quote, while the courts played a significant role in overturning some of Trump's efforts while he was in the White House, he and Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell stocked the judiciary with hundreds of new judges who, on the whole, are more likely to rule in his favor than those they replaced. So, and end quote. This is looking at Trump and his policies, looking into the future of a potential presidency if Trump wins the next election coming up in 6 months. And they're looking at the past, what he did when he was in office last time. And this was significant. We saw in the Ninth Circuit a significant, which has impact here in California. It's a federal judge circuit, Ninth Circuit covers California and some other states here in this end of the country. And we saw a significant shift in the makeup of the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals. And that's because Trump was very active in confirming judges in order to basically do the job of the president, to do what he's supposed to do, which is confirm judges, appoint judges and have them confirmed by the Senate. And that's a legitimate job of the presidency to appoint judges, and it's a job that needs to be done, and when it's not done, it leaves a hole. It leaves a hole in our judicial system. And it to have that job done, that job is done by somebody with a perspective. And when Trump put judges forward to be confirmed, he put judges forward that were somewhat, to some extent, in line with his perspective. And so when those judges were confirmed, we ended up with a shift in the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals. And so because there were a significant number of vacant seats there, that had a profound impact. And we've actually seen the outplaying of that. We've discussed this over in the Freedom Watch and Freedom Friday podcast with John McGowan, about how that has impacted the cases before the Ninth Circuit that apply to education and religious freedom and families in California that are trying to maintain their freedom to choose education options for their children. So it's significant that Time Magazine is covering this and pointing out that this is something that Trump actually did achieve during his time in office. It's something that he proactively did. It's something that he did as part of the job of president, which is completely legitimate and part of his job as president per the U.S. Constitution. And we can probably anticipate more of that happening based on past history. That's been something that's been effective in bringing about change. So that's from Time Magazine about the election coming up in 6 months, which is a good reminder to remind your friends as well as yourself to be prepared to vote in the next election. Make sure that you're registered in time to vote for the future election, and not just this coming election, but every election matters. And we're talking here about president, but every level of the ballot is going to matter. So pay attention to that and don't think too lightly of all those items that need to be voted on. Everything from the local school board to president, they matter. So take a look at that and be aware that it's coming. Don't let it catch you by surprise. Next, I want to mention a brief article. I found this in the SACB, but it's also been published more widely in the Los Angeles Times in an article. The Los Angeles Times article says is titled "Saying the Stakes Could Not Be Higher: Newsom to Speak at Vatican Climate Summit." So yes, you heard that right. Newsom, Governor Newsom, California's governor, is going to be speaking at the Vatican. Yes, the one in Rome. So the Vatican is hosting a climate summit. And something that Governor Gavin Newsom said recently about the climate summit and heading towards that being addressed by the Vatican, by the Pope, Governor Newsom said, "This year holds unprecedented significance for democracy and the climate, two intertwined issues which will define our future." Two issues, democracy and the climate. And he's saying that these two issues, these are two issues which will define our future. He goes on to say, this is Governor Newsom, "With half the world's population poised to elect their leaders amidst a backdrop of escalating political extremism and global temperatures hurtling towards alarming new heights, the stakes could not be higher. There is no greater authority than moral authority, and the Pope's leadership on the climate crisis inspires us all to push further and faster." So Governor Newsom is talking about these issues of democracy and climate, specifically zeroing in on the issue of global temperatures and political extremism, referencing alarming new heights to both of those issues, political extremism and global temperatures. He says the stakes could not be higher then, and this is the bomb here in this quote, quote, "There is no greater authority than moral authority," end quote. That is a quote from our governor. Now, over the last 4 years, we have seen Governor Newsom do some amazing, incredibly far-reaching things that would never have been seen before from a California governor, or from any governor for that matter, in terms of taking authority that was not his, and doing so without regard for moral authority, which is what makes it so ironic that he's referencing moral authority here and standing on it as the highest authority. He's doing it in the context of two issues, saying that they're important issues, but we know that he's not on the moral side of these issues, given some of the other things that he's doing, even now as we speak, with his proposals and his activism in other states even. But taking a step back and looking at this quote and looking at the issues that he's pointing out as being important, I think it's real important for us to look at this in context of the election that's coming up in 6 months. It's important to recognize that he's looking at these issues, the escalating political extremism and the global temperatures, and looking at those as the most important issues, but at the same time referencing moral authority that really he's been setting aside for 4 years. We were talking this morning in a meeting about how when he first, early on when he was in office, Governor Newsom hit the year 2000 or 2020, and we had all the shutdowns that were more extreme in California due to Governor Newsom. And then there were so many, in addition to his just basic shutdown executive orders, there were so many other executive orders. He issued executive order after executive order after executive order without regard to moral authority, but with regard to his own authority, grabbing authority that wasn't his, claiming it as his, and then projecting it on the rest of the state. This is false authority. It is stolen authority. And we have to realize that that is not the way that authority ought to be ought to be received. It should not, authority shouldn't come as something that's stolen or taken. It should be something that is given by God. And ultimately, government is given by God, and it is given by God to do certain things, and we've talked about this many times on this podcast before. What is the purpose of government? The purpose of government is to restrain evil. It's to punish evil and to praise those who do good. That has almost been the exact opposite for our governor. So he's gone against what God's design for government is and run to the things that do not fit with God's plan for government. So this article is fascinating. You can check it out. It was published April 29th by Los Angeles Times, and it's definitely interesting to see what our governors and other world leaders' perspectives are on what's important in society and what moral even means. And that sort of leads us to the next topic and final topic for today, which is the issue of mission and focus. What is the why of education? And for this, I'd like to talk a little bit about the stated mission, the role and responsibilities of the California Department of Education, California, and look sort of at the big picture of what the state system of education has to deal with, is charged with, and also what they state as what their goals are. And so there's a short article or a summary of on the California Department of Education's website that states what their role and responsibilities are. What is their mission? And it's fascinating to read because it doesn't go much into what you might think. So in this article, it states, "The California Department of Education oversees the state's diverse and dynamic public school system, which is responsible for the education of," get this is amazing how many, "more than 7 million children and young adults in more than 9,000 schools. The CDE and the State Superintendent of Public Instruction are responsible for enforcing education law and regulations and for continuing to reform and improve public elementary school programs, secondary school programs, adult education, some preschool programs, and child care programs. The CDE's mission is to provide a world-class education for all students from early childhood to adulthood. The CDE serves our state by innovating and collaborating with educators, schools, parents, and community partners, preparing students to live, work, and thrive in a highly connected world. The CDE's goals include," and here's the list. This is a bulleted list. I'll put a link below so you can take a look at it for yourself if you'd like. Holding local educational agencies accountable for student achievement in all programs and for all groups of students. That's number one. That's the number one goal listed on the CDE's website. Holding local educational agencies accountable for student achievement in all programs and for all groups of students. Number two, building local capacity to enable all students to achieve state standards. So they're talking about state standards. There's some kind of standard here that they're referencing. Number three, expanding and improving a system of recruiting, developing, and supporting teachers that instills excellence in every classroom, preschool through adult. Number four, providing statewide leadership that promotes the effective use of technology to improve teaching and learning. Number five, increasing efficiency and effectiveness in administration of kindergarten through grade 12 education, including student record keeping and good financial management practices. Number six, providing broader and more effective communication among the home, school, district, county, and state. Okay, communication. Establishing and fostering systems of school, home, and community resources that provide the physical, emotional, and intellectual support that each student needs to succeed. Advocating for additional resources and flexibility and provide statewide leadership that promotes good business practices so that California schools can target their resources to ensure success for all students. Improving the effectiveness and efficiency of the department. So that last one there is focused on just making their themselves at the department, at the state level, the Department of Education, work better. Prior to that, we're talking about the state basically having themselves function better as a business, as a company, if you will. Now, obviously, they're involved in educating students, or they're supposed to be, but that's not really the focus of this whole list of priorities here. And if you think about it, they mention success, they mention achievement, but there's nothing given in... I've read to you the entire thing, from the top to the bottom. Roles and responsibilities, brief description of the California Department of Education. And I read to you the introduction paragraph and every bullet they list. Nowhere is given any kind of a definition of what success is or achievement. And so I wanted to sort of take a step back from this and look at, well, the state of California is massive, right? We've got 40 million people. We're the largest state. We have the most inhabitants of any state in the union. We've also got the largest set of schools. We've got 9,000 schools, 7 million children, right? So what should the focus of that be? And if you look at their overview here, and in all fairness, this is an overview of a massive, massive system. It's huge. And there's a lot of work to be done just to keep it organized, right? And so when you look at education and you look at the way that it's structured here in California, a lot of the focus on what success is has to happen at the local level. And there's a lot of accountability that's referenced here to state standards. So there's some sort of a standard at the state level that the local schools are supposed to sort of look to and try to reach. But there's a lot of responsibility placed at the local level, but it's all connected to this big state system. So there's sort of a constant flux of probably tension and tension between local and state, and trying to figure out, you know, where the balance is in this big system. But if we take a step back, how do we look at what is education supposed to be about? And how do we determine that for ourselves? Because if we're making these decisions, if parents make their own decisions for education for their children, what are they basing those decisions on? So as parents, when we look at our children and we want the best for them, and we want them to succeed by our own measure, right? Or some measure that makes sense to us, at least, we want to have a basis, a foundation for our children that makes sense and that has some legitimacy to it. So we can't really look to this list at the state of California and say, okay, well, that makes sense to me as the basis for which we will use for our child's education. It's trying to manage 9,000 schools and 7 million children. They've got a different foundation for their system. And we have to look at education differently from a number of different perspectives, okay? But starting with, what do we want our children to know? We're going to have to start with the why questions. You know, why do we want our children to learn what we want them to learn? And if we take a step back, we need to start asking those questions. We need to ask, you know, hopefully you've been asking these already, but why am I homeschooling? Why is my kid not in the bigger system with most of the other kids in our state? And why am I doing this? Why am I doing it the way I'm doing it? What am I wanting to teach my kids? What do I want our kids to know? And how do I want them to learn this? Because without some sort of a structure of the why being answered, the what being answered, the how being answered, we really are going to end up with just focusing on a whole bunch of sort of structural, how do we be organized when we do this? But if that's our only focus, how do we be organized while we do it? Then we've lost the essence of the foundation of whatever it is we're trying to pass on to our kids. Because if we care about what that verse says in Ecclesiastes, the end of the matter, all has been heard, fear God, keep his commandments. If that's where your focus is, that should be the foundation with everything else built on that. But if it's not, what is the foundation, and is everything just coming back to the scattered, how do we stay organized? We need that foundation. And here at FPM, our focus is much the same. We have to keep coming back to that foundation of, why are we here? What are we protecting? Why are we protecting it? And how are we going to do that? And that's something we have to constantly come back to, because we want to make a difference for something that matters. And that passage in Ecclesiastes matters. This foundation is something worth fighting for. It's something we care about. And it's something that we have to engage practically in the why, the what, and the how, just like with our education for teaching our kids. We have to have the understanding of the why, the what, and the how for protecting our homeschool freedoms if we want to keep them. And for you to get involved, those are the same questions you need to ask. Why would I want to get involved in protecting homeschool freedom? What can I do, and how can I do it? And you can learn more about that on our website or by contacting us if you'd like to be more involved. But today, I just encourage you to remember the foundation. What is your foundation? Ask yourself that question. What is our foundation? And remember Ecclesiastes 12:13, the end of the matter, all has been heard. Fear God and keep his commandments, for this is the whole duty of man. Talk to you next time. Have a great week. Thanks for joining us for this episode of The Front Line with FPM. For more information about the topics we discuss here, check out Family Protection Ministries at fpmca.org and subscribe to our channel.